Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go to Tuesday. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor and I ready to roll on a Tuesday. We still got a lot of football to talk about. You know, it's funny. I remember this every year. Monday, you talk about the game, and then I always feel like Tuesday, stories come out about the game, and you get like an added dimension to the football game, and stories are starting to pour out about the game and what happened. It's kind of fun.
It's the best time of the year.
It is the best time. Plus, we got the Anthony Davis LeBron thing. I want to talk about this. I'm driving to work this morning, and here they come. The Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, who's the greatest of all time, because Tom Brady's blown away, you know, the great ones. He's blown away Montana and Peyton Manning. Those guys are unbelievable. And Tom's blown past them. So now it's like, okay, the only thing left is Michael Jordan. And, you know, it's a fun argument. But I just want to say this, is there's a lot of arguments that you're never going to win. You're never going to win at the local bar. And you're never going to win the Tom Brady's greater than Michael Jordan at the bar argument, because the Michael Jordan argument is easier. 6 for 6. 6 finals. 6 wins. 6 MVPs. Nobody mentions he, you know, played for 15 years. That's too complicated. That's why people don't play golf. 330 million Americans, 3 play golf. Why? Because it's hard. It's a hard argument. You're never going to win that. Michael had the Be Like Mike brand, the shoe culture. You know, he was the first corporate superstar in America that all the corporations jumped on. You're never going to win that argument. But I can make arguments for Brady. I can make arguments for Brady. Think about this. Football is much less forgiving than basketball. Football is much more precise than basketball. If a quarterback in a Super Bowl makes 2 mistakes, one doesn't even have to be him. It can be a tip ball that's intercepted. You lose the game. In the NBA, you could have 3 atrocious games in the finals and still win. I, this morning, went and looked up Michael Jordan's worst NBA final games. He had a 9-for-26 clunker, an 11-for-28. Sonics, Jazz, Lakers. It didn't matter. He had a better team, and you can have a terrible night shooting in the NBA. And you got tomorrow night, game 2, game 3, game 4. Football is much more precise and much less forgiving. Advantage Brady. Number 2 is, Brady won with several different stars. There was the Dion Branch era. There was the Corey Dillon era. There is the Gronk era. As he's deteriorated, now it's the Edelman era. Brady's won with several Robins. He's Batman. He's had a lot of Robins. Michael Jordan didn't do anything pre-Pippen and anything post-Pippen. Michael Jordan struggled to win playoff series. Forget titles. He struggled to win playoff series without Scottie Pippen. Even in college, he won a title with James Worthy. James Worthy left 2 years in college. He didn't win the next year without James Worthy. Okay, advantage Tom. Here's the third one. Tom, in a sport where even practice is hard. Football practice is hard. Basketball practice, I had it in high school. It's fun. You sweat. There's a lot of drills that are fun. Football practice, and I love football. I hated football practice. It's hard. And yet Tom Brady has gone 18, 19 years, never missed a beat. Emotionally, Michael Jordan quit twice. He quit. It was like, it's too much. It's too emotionally draining. He quit twice. In a sport that's easier, that elevates the star, that worships the star, that back massages the star. He had his own dressing room with the Bulls. Football, rain, sleet, practice, tackled, hurt, always, 19 years, not a break. Advantage Tom. I can make all those arguments for Tom, but I also know that Michael's the first corporate superstar, and Michael was cooler, and cooler matters, and Be Like Mike, and the Nike bubble. I can't win those arguments. And I also know that Michael Jordan has nostalgia on his side. Michael Jordan's like a piece of art. I swear to God, he gets better. Michael's gotten better every year. When you close your eyes if you're sitting at home. If you're driving and listening, do not close your eyes. But if you are at home, do me a favor, close your eyes. And I want you to just think of Michael Jordan. You don't even remember the Orlando Woolridge Jordan's a Ball Hog years. You don't remember Quentin Daly. You don't remember all the firings. You don't remember the Washington Wizards jersey. You don't remember the broken leg. You don't remember the baseball. And that team, by the way, finished last. You don't remember any of it. Michael's art, he gets better every year. You don't even remember the bad times. But I will leave you with this. If you want to make an argument, let me just leave you with this. Basketball is a sport built for dynasties. Football is not. In 13, just remember this, 13 NBA players have 6 rings. One NFL player does. Last name Brady, first name Tom. There's my argument. All right, let's segue to the NBA. The big story right now, it's obviously it's early February. The big story is the trading deadline Thursday. And, you know, there's going to be guys moving around and stuff. But the big story is Anthony Davis, a great player, has informed his team through his agent, Rich Paul, I don't want to play here anymore. I've given you guys like 6.5 years. You've messed up trade, signed banned contracts, had a bunch of coaches. I'm out. And I always support the mobile player. I mean, owners move their teams, GMs, coaches move. Why can't star players? And it's not like he didn't give them time. He gave them 6.5 years. The story I'm told last night from two sources I trust is that the Lakers want Anthony Davis now. They want to create inertia. They want to create chemistry. And frankly, there's a lot of tension in the building. LeBron didn't come here to waste another year of his life with Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee, and Lonzo Ball. That's not why LeBron came to the Lakers. There is intense pressure to get it done. And the Pelicans know this. And the Pelicans have leverage here. A, they know the Lakers need AD now. Secondly, I am told there is massive pressure on the Pelicans general manager, Dell Demps, from other league executives to not trade Davis to the Lakers now. If you're going to do it at the end of the year. Nobody's going to do the Lakers any favor. The Lakers have been the rich, good-looking guy at the high school reunion. People are tired of him. They're the most glamorous franchise. They've got all the titles. They've had all the free agents. And now they've got LeBron, who people already resent many in the NBA because he's kind of manipulating the league and moving guys around. There is massive pressure on Dell Demps to not make this move now. And the Pelicans have a little, you know, tension there because the Lakers just keep adding player and draft pick and player and draft. The Lakers are now up to 8 players and swallowing a horrible contract, Solomon Hill. 8 players between picks and players and a bad contract. I've never seen a trade in terms of overall people more lopsided. I still think you always want the star over the other guys. But here's what's going to be interesting. The Lakers are acknowledging, I'm told, they're going to have to wildly overcompensate. They're going to have to give more picks than they want, potentially 4 first-round picks. They're going to have to give more players than they want, essentially all of their good young players. They're going to have to give an expiring contract or two, and they're also going to have to swallow a terrible, terrible contract with Solomon Hill. But what the Lakers believe is this. When you live in New York, when you're the owner of the Cowboys, Yankees, Lakers, there are these massive brands, Ohio State football, Notre Dame football, but let's just keep it to pro sports. At these big Cowboy brands, Yankees, Lakers, Real Madrid, that kind of stuff, that great creates its own chemistry and inertia. And that if you get an A-Rod to the Yankees, or if you get a AD with LeBron to the Lakers, you can't really overpay for it. You'll get so many benefits, so much free publicity, so much marketing. Other guys will want to be in this millennial NBA where stars want to join the cool team that wins titles, that you just overpay for it. There are some things, I don't love the idea of it, but when you have these unique American or global sports brands, and I would say Yankees and Lakers, Cowboys, are very rare. It's rarefied air. You just get the star and worry about everything else later. Jerry Jones said it a year ago, talking about his stadium when he built his stadium. And he said, you know what, man, there were cost overruns. But I look back at my life, I overpaid for my big successes every time. And when I tried to get a bargain, I ended up getting it and not being happy or missing out. And this was sort of the Steinbrenner philosophy with the Yankees. It's the Jerry Jones philosophy. And the Lakers now are having to kind of own the fact they're giving away all their draft picks, all the mentoring, all the coaching, all the work, all the draft, everything. It just leaves and you get Anthony Davis, and it will create a momentum and an inertia that for these big brands pays off. And people want to join the party. You know, Jason Whitlock was laughing about this yesterday. I mean, the Lakers now are up to, according to one report, giving away 8 different pieces.
Magic doesn't want to give up everything. I don't think Pelinka, Jenny Butt, they just don't want to scrap everything for Anthony Davis. But that's what they're about to do because LeBron and Rich Paul are forcing them to. Draft picks and everything else. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's bones will be thrown into this trade at some point.
It's the reality of business with LeBron. When you get into business with LeBron, there's some carnage.
Well, now, it's also just temporary. You have to do what's going to make you successful in the next few years, not in the next 10 years or 20 years. You're not building a dynasty. You're trying to get a championship.
Exactly. So, you know, this is the LeBron business. Pat Riley's probably laughing his butt off right now, seeing what his buddy Magic's going through. I told you so, Magic. You got to give up the future, give up picks to win now. And I think with these big global and domestic brands, there is a certain chemistry and inertia and momentum that's created when you get the A-Rod, when you win a Super Bowl, when you get multiple stars, Shaq and Kobe, and you just it just kind of takes over the league and has a life of its own, and you go for it, and you give up all your rental properties to buy that one big house in Beverly Hills, and you know it probably doesn't always make business sense, but you sit and watch it grow, and then everybody gets rich, and then you fight over it when dad dies. I don't know. But this is the very latest we have on this story. I'll give you more as it develops. And my gut feeling this morning is different than my gut feeling yesterday. My gut feeling this morning is the Lakers do not get Anthony Davis by Thursday, which is going to raise another huge question, which I'll get to later in the show. I thought 24 hours ago it was going to happen. I don't think so today, this morning, based on my source that said that Dell Demps is facing intense pressure from around the league to not let the Lakers have AD now. There is an anti-Laker bias in this league. There's no question about it. There has been for years. People are tired of the Lakers getting all the attention, love, glamour, and players.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
And I've said this for years. The media, they're human beings, men, women. They have favorite teams, favorite politicians. They're imperfect. Just admit it. That's why we have a segment every week called Colin Right, Colin Wrong. I whiff. I tell you. I acknowledge it. I look in the mirror. That the media bias is not simply in what they say. It's in the stories they choose to cover. I've worked in newsrooms and said, why aren't we covering that? And the young producer, maybe leaning left or right politically, has a favorite team or a team they don't like. We just don't cover the story. It's interesting, isn't it? Think about last year. Malcolm Butler, a good, not spectacular corner, was benched for the Super Bowl. He had a bad week of practice. In the two previous playoff games, he got absolutely torched by Blake Bortles and Marcus Mariota. That sentence had never been uttered. And Belichick decided, you were late to practice, you've been awful, I don't like the matchups, I'm benching you. And the media vultures circled Belichick. He's a dope, he's out of touch, this will never last, the dynasty is certainly over. This for the greatest coach of all time. Malcolm Butler in the two previous playoff games was awful. Blake Bortles and Marcus Mariota, when they threw and targeted him, had 146 quarterback ratings. Belichick, best coach in football, said, yeah, I'm not going to play you. You had a bad week of practice. You're a mess. Vultures, teeth sharpened, eaten alive. Sean McVay, meanwhile, who has two playoff wins, one with an asterisk, did not play Todd Gurley much the last 2 weeks. McVay said he's healthy. Todd Gurley came out after the Super Bowl and said, yeah, I'm healthy. Where's the criticism? Where are the credits that Sean McVay has earned that Bill Belichick did not earn? McVay, who I like a lot, the Rams, who are very fun to watch, but McVay had a stinker. And if Gurley is healthy and the Rams simply lied, how in the world would we treat the Patriots for that? Todd Gurley's a top 10 NFL player. When he had 18-plus touches, the Rams were 9-0. Super Bowl, barely part of the game plan. So either McVay should get crushed for not giving him the ball, or the Rams and McVay should get torched for lying about it. Malcolm Butler was atrocious in the two previous weeks in the playoffs. Blake Bortles ate him up. Marcus Mariota ate him up. Had a bad week, late to a meeting, Belichick benched him. And it was Shark Week among the media. It was vulture circling. So when you tell me the media doesn't have a bias, I look at this story and think, really? No bias, ever. Bill Belichick is inarguably the best football coach ever. And I say that with Jimmy Johnson as a friend. I say that loving Bill Parcells. Belichick has separated from the profession. We gave him not a single pass. McVay, two playoff wins, one with an asterisk. I mean, the story's moved on. The media's reaction to it is, okie dokie, have a good offseason. See you in Cancun, maybe. That's it. All right. The bias is not just in the words you write, but in the stories you cover.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
As I'm watching the Patriots dynasty, it makes me think is that I can see somebody duplicating what the Warriors are doing because I can see a bunch of great stars getting together in another city. It could be L.A. It could be New York. I can see the Warriors championships, that dynasty being replicated. We've seen that a lot in the NBA. I'm not sure if New England's can be, and I want to bring in Peter King via the Coward Global Satellite Network. I mean, Peter, you've been covering this league for 30 years. I don't think we're going to see a 20-year dynasty. I don't. I mean, you talk to Robert Kraft. You talk to Brady. Privately or not so privately, do they think you can duplicate this?
It's not happening, Colin. It's never going to happen. I mean, it's amazing that, I mean, consider the truly great teams of our lifetime, okay? The truly great ones, okay? And that would be, dependent on how old you are, the Green Bay Packers, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of very good teams that might have won a couple of them, but I'm talking about the great teams, all right? All of those teams exist one less. They won less. And they existed in a time before free agency and before a salary cap.
Yeah.
And what is amazing about this run is that, and I said it last year when the Seth Wickersham story came out on ESPN, that everybody is saying, oh my God, it's going to be the end of the Patriots. And who knows? Maybe it would have been. I don't know. But just think of this. The best owner, coach, quarterback triumvirate, I think, of our lifetime, you know, before this one, was Eddie DeBartolo, Bill Walsh, Joe Montana.
Yeah, yeah.
They lasted 10 years. They lasted 10 years. Well, assuming that Brady plays again, it's Kraft, Belichick, Brady, and they're entering their 19th year. It's amazing. We're never going to see it again. Kraft told me at midnight on Sunday, you will never see this again. This is not an owner bragging about his team. This is the absolute truth. We're not seeing it again.
You know, two things are happening that I think are an advantage to New England. The league is getting younger, and the league is more mobile. So the same guys, the same staff, the same O-line coach. The Patriots are uniquely experienced and uniquely old in key spots coaching and playing. And as the league gets more mobile and hires younger players and younger coaches and everybody's moving around and staffs are changing, you know, I look at Josh McDaniels and that relationship with Brady, and I think it's the most under-discussed relationship in the NFL. Go to this Sunday's game. By the way, they put in eight plays, as you reported first, in Kansas City in a hotel dining room. And then in this one, I mean, Josh McDaniels, to me, I could argue, won this game. Did he not?
Well, you know, Colin, I was over at their party 1:30, 2 o'clock Monday morning at their hotel. And one of their guys told me, he says, you need to find out what happened with, you know, in the fourth quarter and how we changed everything on that deal. So I know Dwayne Allen, okay? He's the backup tight end to Gronk. And I knew him pretty well when he played in Indianapolis. So I asked everybody, where's Dwayne Allen? Where's Dwayne? I finally find him. You know, I can barely hear him over Snoop Dogg because there's this 90 decibel party going on. And I asked him. I asked him to tell me what exactly happened. He said, Josh McDaniels gathered us all on the sideline. And he said, essentially, that we're changing everything that we've done to this point. We haven't practiced this at all leading up to this game. We want to keep their standard defense on the field. We don't want them to go nickel. We want them to go base defense because we think we would have great matchups in our passing game, running Gronk against linebackers, Edelman maybe against a linebacker, a running back like Rex Burkhead against a linebacker. We're going to get these matchups. So they did it. Five plays, 69 yards, the only touchdown of the game. And to me, I agree with you totally. The guy who's lost in all of this for the New England Patriots, that they're incredibly lucky, has not been picked off. And for the life of me, with some of the things we've seen coaches do over the years, for everybody to hate on McDaniels because he backed out of the Colts thing last year. And I get it. I get it. It was a bad thing to do. But to now say, well, you're never going to coach again, and maybe he'll never be a head coach. I don't know. But wow, what a job he's done both in Kansas City and in Atlanta in the championship game and the Super Bowl.
Peter, I think we're giving McVay a little pass. Last year, we ate Belichick alive because Malcolm Butler didn't play in the Super Bowl, but he had been eaten alive by Blake Bortles and Marcus Mariota in previous playoff games. Bortles and Mariota had 146 combined quarterback rating when they threw at him 11 times. And then he had a bad week of practice. Then he was late to a meeting. And Belichick said, you're not playing well, you're out. He was ravaged. Todd Gurley didn't play. Gurley says I'm healthy. McVay says I'm healthy. They're 9-0 when he touched the ball 18 times. They're either lying about his health or McVay butchered it. Shouldn't we be more critical of McVay here?
Oh, I think so. And I think Sean McVay has some plays in this game that he would like to have back. But Colin, I'll tell you this. This is my problem even more so than that because honestly, you know, Todd Gurley had not been an impact player for the last 2 months. And whether there's something wrong with him or whether teams are playing him a different way, I can't tell you that. All I know is I would not have entered the Super Bowl saying, we're giving it to Gurley 28 times.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
And CJ Anderson, three of the last four games, has been a better back. So I guess what I'm saying is I fault Sean McVay for something else. For not being explosive, imaginative, a little crazy. That's what the Rams are. With all the motions, all of the crazy ideas on offense, there was none of that in this game. So, and maybe Belichick took it away, but all I'm saying is I would be more angry as a Rams fan that they played a pretty they executed a pretty boring offensive game plan that wasn't the McVay kind of game plan. And that's one of the big reasons why the only points they scored were on a almost a Hail Mary field goal in four quarters. It's amazing, really.
I think it's going to be, and I know you don't pay a ton of attention to the draft, but the Patriots have 12 draft picks. The Colts have $900 million in cap space. I do believe there's a handful of teams. Kansas City has a loaded roster, a great quarterback, a great coach. I think Philadelphia is my pick for the NFC. I think Howie Roseman, Doug Peterson, Lurie, and Wentz are all really gifted people. Is there a team, as we kind of wrap up on the season, is there a team next year that if I said to you, Peter, they're going to surprise people or they're your team? I've said I think the Colts are going to pop next year with the new players, the money, and the picks. Do you have one?
I love the Colts. I think that's a fantastic pick with a healthy quarterback. I really like the Ravens, too, because it's a year of getting Lamar Jackson used to playing in a system that will combine what he does well and also combine some downfield throws, which they need to execute in that offense. But I do want to say one thing about the draft, Colin. Just think about this. The New England Patriots will pick 32nd in the first round.
Right.
In the next 68 picks of a draft that all the guys early on anyway are saying it's the second and third rounds and going into the fourth where the strength of this draft is, between pick 32 and pick 100, 68 picks. New England has six picks. They got more picks in the first three rounds than anybody.
Wow.
So with those picks, in my opinion, if the Patriots choose to, I think they could easily move up into the middle part of the round and get the quarterback who they think in 2021 or 22 will succeed Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Now, could that be Kyler Murray? Daniel Jeremiah thinks so. And I think it's really smart to look out for Kyler Murray for this reason. Remember what the Patriots were doing 3 days before the draft last year. Josh McDaniels was with Baker Mayfield in Texas. I forget who reported that. It might have been Peter Schrager or somebody on draft night. But that was reported on draft night, never refuted by the Patriots. So obviously, they have it in their head. Let's get a quarterback. And they've got all these picks. If they want to, they will be able to move up and get their long-term quarterback in this draft.
Oh, great stuff, Peter King. He throws out a Baker Mayfield Patriot nugget. Look at that. I can't let that go. That's great. Peter, NBCSports.com, thanks.
It wasn't my nugget, though. It wasn't my nugget. I stole it from, yeah, I think, NFL Network on draft night, so give them the credit.
Okay, I will. Thank you, Peter.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
With good comes bad, with bad comes good. LeBron's obviously a great player. Last 10, 12 years, best player in the NBA, and he's won a bunch of titles. But the Lakers right now, when you do business with LeBron, you can ask Dan Gilbert, you can ask Magic Johnson privately, you can ask Pat Riley, you got to sell a little bit of your soul. Pat Riley right now is laughing his ass off in Miami, looking at Magic Johnson, his buddy, saying, this is what I warned you about, because they had talked about it. When LeBron wants a play date with Anthony Davis, you have to sell your other kids. There's a little bit of that with LeBron. 15th year in the NBA, three titles and two franchises mostly wrecked when he left. He left Cleveland, they were a disaster. He left Miami with Pat Riley and Mickey Arison. D. Wade, like, these are legends in the NBA, kind of a mess. He just left Cleveland, they're back to being a mess. The offers the Lakers are having to make to even consider a deal for Anthony Davis. The Pelicans want four first-round and second-round picks to start with. Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, Michael Beasley, Rajon Rondo, Lance Stevenson, Lonzo Ball, eight players, and they also have to swallow a horrible contract, Solomon Hill, who can't play but makes a bunch of money.
You would think they were trading LeBron James.
Right? What's Anthony Davis ever done? We know he's talented. And this is the theory. You have to make decisions. LeBron's about winning now. LeBron's window does not include a developing Lonzo Ball. They need a star player. And I would say this. It's the duality of LeBron. You'll win when he's there, but you're going to be left with a mess on your hands. I would say increasingly, I was told by a league executive a couple of weeks ago that LeBron's getting harder to work with. His window's closing. He is more demanding. He doesn't have years to burn. He doesn't have practices to burn. And sometimes his guys can be exhausting. They want total loyalty, and they don't give it in return. They think you're hustling them. They're fighting for every penny, and it can be exhausting. And you got to give away picks, and you got to give away players. And LeBron wants to win now, and it's not easy. And LeBron was never easy, because the best player in the world at any sport's not perfectly easy. Even Brady and Michael, and you know, they're not easy. Jeter wasn't perfectly easy, despite what you read. But LeBron's become increasingly difficult. And I also think LeBron, and this is fair to say, has a history of, for whatever reasons, he can struggle with authority figures. He struggled with coaches. He struggled with Spoelstra. He struggles now with Luke Walton, despite what everybody says. He struggled with Riley, Mickey Arison, Dan Gilbert. You know, David Blatt, he can struggle a lot if you don't have his worldview, if you don't acquiesce to what he wants, then LeBron gets, you know, and the window's closing now. He's not in year 8 with 10 years left. He's now in year 15. He just came off an injury. There's a lot going on here. And I feel a little desperation, a little panic with the Lakers? Yes, because here's what I keep coming back to. LeBron, I mean, remember last year, he had a terrible January, and then there was the rumor of a trade, and he went out that night and played great. He can be a little moody. I found at the Super Bowl, LeBron was very, very happy on his Instagram, very happy on Twitter this weekend. Why? Because the reports were coming out that Anthony Davis and the Lakers were getting real close. What happens Thursday if it doesn't happen? And my sources tell me this morning, it's closer to not happening than happening. What does LeBron do for the next 3 months? Do you get... I'm out because of load management, LeBron, whatever that was. I'm just saying, Doug Gottlieb said it on our show a year ago, and, you know, I like LeBron, and I like his camp, and I think they've been great for the league, but you got to look in the mirror sometimes. It's LeBron comes 15 years in this league, 16 years. We got three titles, and we got three different wrecked franchises when he leaves. Here's Doug Gottlieb.
Look at the record for the Cavs when he left. Look at the record for the Heat when he left. Part of it is that's who LeBron is. Like, you try and create everything to be perfect for him, and when he leaves, it's like the kid that comes over to your house, and every time he comes over to your house, right, somebody ends up being sick or the playroom's messed up. What happened? They're like, well, LeBron was here. This is what happens. LeBron's a lot of fun, and everybody has a good time. And then when he leaves, you know, everything is a mess. That's LeBron James. When he leaves it a mess. Other players, when they leave the situation better than it had been.
And there's, and this is not anti-LeBron, but remember, this is a tougher situation to begin with. When he went to Miami, they had a star, and they brought one along immediately. Wade and Bosch. When he went to Cleveland, they had a star, Kyrie, and they brought one along immediately, Kevin Love. LeBron's just looking for one guy that's even close to his level. Forget a second. This is tougher. LeBron's out of his prime. I mean, this situation, I'm being told it's tense, and if it doesn't get done Thursday, it is going to be a very interesting second half of the Lakers.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Well, Mr. Ram, the Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson, who guaranteed a Rams win. I want to get to the serious thing, though. I said this. When Belichick did not play Malcolm Butler, who had had two previously horrible playoff games against Bortles and Mariota, benched him, we killed Belichick. McVay didn't play Gurley. My thing was, well, then Gurley better be hurt, because you give Todd Gurley the ball. You talked to Gurley before the Super Bowl. Was he healthy?
He said, I'm 100%. That was his way. I talked to him the night before. I sent him a text. He called me right after the text. I said, how you feeling? He said, Eric, I'm 100%. I'm going to say this. This reminds, you ever seen the movie Face Off with John Travolta and Nicolas Cage?
I never did.
You never
saw
it?
His face off.
He was a different guy. This was almost like Jeff Fisher was Sean McVay. I mean, it was like a switch. Almost he coached like Jeff Fisher that day. The offense was
no
like
adjustments.
That. Man, I'm disappointed, man. I'm serious. The big thing in this football game, I got a call from Hall of Famer Richard Dent. I got a call from Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson and my good friend Harvey Armstrong, who played for the Eagles and played SMU together. All three of them said the same thing at first. Man, why ain't y'all running the football? Man, is Gurley, see what you say, is Gurley hurt? I said, I talked to him the night before. He said, I'm 100. I even sent him a text, go get that MVP. That was a perfect time to run the football.
They didn't run C.J. Anderson either.
Man, look, C.J. Anderson's a good player.
Yeah,
he really is.
He is.
But he's not Todd Gurley.
No, he's
not.
You
play your best player. That's like taking Tom Brady out the game and putting somebody else in. You play your best player, and you run him. If he ran about 20, 25 times and we lost, I'll say, you know what? I'm good with that.
No, I mean, it's funny because if you had to run Gurley 20 times and you lost, I could walk to the podium and say, I felt in this moment I didn't want to put the burden on a third-year quarterback.
There you go.
That's coaching.
Exactly.
Like my takeaway was, I thought Goff would play fine, but my takeaway was, going into this game was, Gurley needs to be the guy to win. And in the first quarter, Eric, after two series, my takeaway was, Gurley's not part of the game plan. Though there was no score, I was like, oh, this is a huge edge for New England.
Man, it was a perfect setup for us. I mean, all we need to do was run the football. And if I'm Belichick, I'm like, oh, y'all not? Oh, good. Perfect.
No, I mean, Belichick's thinking, so you're going to have Goff try to beat us.
Exactly. You're going to put your faith in a young quarterback.
Kid.
Okay. And the play action? There ain't no play action. We're not even worried about the play action. I mean, think about this. We didn't even get in the red zone. The field goal we kicked was a 53-yard field goal to score. Other than that, we wouldn't even score points.
Eric, do you know, there's a guy online, Warren Sharp, that does this. The Rams didn't even go to, like, double tight ends to create protection until the Brandon Cooks play.
Oh, wow.
Like, I mean, they went the whole – I mean, it was like – it was just an incredibly odd game.
It was really odd. And it's funny you say that because I was driving over here this morning. I'm like – why didn't they go a lot of two tights? Because I can hear when we play, they say Rams come out in double tights. You know, that's a running set. That's to protect your quarterback
Yes. If
you have to and run the football.
But that basically Lawrence Taylor, if you played the Giants when they had Lawrence Taylor.
Oh, you ran two tights.
You ran two tight ends.
You ran two tights.
Joe Gibbs tells the story. He goes, we didn't run it. Everybody thinks I'm a genius. I just went to two tights because we had to block LT.
Look.
That's what you do with a great pass rush. And the Patriots, from the first series on, Eric, had a tremendous pass rush.
Yeah, they got to Jared Goff. And I got to say, Jared didn't play bad. He didn't play great, but he didn't play like, whoa, that was a horrible game for him. No, I just felt like they put too much pressure on a young quarterback
Yeah. And
did not use our best player. I mean, and it showed. I mean, you know, you got to say it. And sometimes, you know, I say these young coaches, and coaches in general, they get caught up in throwing the football. I'm going to show you how smart I am. I'm going to show you this trick play. You're going to go like, wow, did you see that? My God, that was such a trick play. Instead of just, you know what? Old-fashioned football, turn and hand it to him.
It's always been the knock on Lane Kiffin. They call it vanity play calling, that young, hotshot offensive coordinators get into vanity play calling, which is, look at this clever play, and look at this clever play. And instead of, and by the way, we saw it with Sean Payton in the game.
Against us.
He got into vanity play calling. Sean, you got the ball down in the red zone, run the ball, eat the clock, kick the field goal. These offensive coaches, listen, it's like anything else. It's almost biblical. If you had a great voice, you'd sing all day.
Yeah.
If you're an offensive genius, you want to show everybody you're an offensive genius. By the way, Gurley declined to talk to the media today at the Rams facility. I want to ask you this. Mm-hmm. The team that loses the Super Bowl, the team that loses in the championship round, they're not guaranteed to be back. Half the teams that lose these championship series, they take a step back. Are you worried about the emotional pushback? This is an old team in certain spots on the offensive line. Are you worried the Rams take a big step back?
No, I'm not worried. I mean, look, first of all, you know, we have a lot of good pieces on that football team, a lot of good pieces. I'm sure we'll lose some pieces this year. This next season coming up, but let everybody know, I still have the utmost faith in Coach Sean McVay. The utmost faith.
Yeah, he had a bad day.
All of us have them. Players have them. Coaches have them.
Eagles last year outcoached the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Everybody
has them. So, you know, it's no worry there. You know, I just feel like that football is a game of chance. You know, you've got to have injury free. You've got to have the right players on the field. It's got to be a mix. You got to think about this, Colin. This is 3 years the Rams have been back in L.A. 3 years, and we're in the Super Bowl. Now that's big. I mean, no matter if we win, lose, or drop, we would have been fantastic. But still, that is a big step for a coach that's been only coaching in the National Football League for 2 years.
You know, I said yesterday, Eric, that the way the NFL works, it first humbles you. Belichick fired in Cleveland. It humbles you, and then it allows you baby steps to a title.
Right.
If McVay won it, it was almost like, okay, you're too young. You have this game. Football has a way. It humbled Bill Parcells. It humbled Joe Gibbs. It humbled Troy Aikman. It's humbled the legends. It humbled Peyton Manning,
all of us,
who got to a Super Bowl and got humiliated. It just would have been too darn early.
Well, there's no such thing as too darn early, I don't think. You know, but you're right. It does humble you because sometimes you start feeling like, okay, I got this. You know, I can honestly say my rookie season, I'm like, man, this ain't that hard after all. This ain't. I mean, after a couple of games, I'm like, this is kind of easy. Then, you know, as time went on, like, man, let me shut up. This is hard.
Dan Marino.
So most definitely.
Dan Marino.
It humbles you. Yes.
You get to a Super Bowl, you may never get back. Right. Good stuff.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, here's the breaking news. According to Woj, the Lakers are still glad to engage with the Pelicans on an Anthony Davis trade, but the Lakers have pulled out. They're no longer wanting to bid against themselves. The Lakers said the bids and the questions and the demands are outrageous. The Lakers were not going to give the Pelicans the 6 to 8 draft picks they wanted for Anthony Davis. The Lakers had agreed to send their entire young core, Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, Zubac, to the Pelicans, as well as KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's an interesting player. But the Lakers said, we're out of this thing. We're not selling the farm for it. I agree with the Lakers here. I understand those. I get the argument to just go for it. But remember, with LeBron, there's carnage. Cleveland, both times he left, was a mess. Miami, first year and a half, 2 years he left, was a mess. When you sell everything for LeBron, there is carnage afterwards. And the Lakers, and I know this firsthand, they don't want to give away everything. Now, they're willing to give away a ton. But Brad Turner of the LA Times broke the initial story. The Lakers have pulled out. This is what I said mostly today. I believe last night they would get it done. And then this morning and late last night, I got a text from an executive in the league that says there is pressure on the Pelicans to basically rob the Lakers and the Lakers to make the Lakers hurt. And Magic, I think the Lakers made the right move here. I really do. LeBron this morning was asked about Anthony Davis at a shoot around. Here's LeBron earlier today.
I kind of tend not to play much fantasy basketball. You know, that's just how I've always been. If something were to occur with our team, no matter if it's him or if it's somebody else throughout the trade deadline, we will approach it then.
I listen, I'm not flipping on this. I would not give all this stuff up to get Anthony Davis.
It's outrageous.
It's outrageous. Now, I do get Yankees, Cowboys, Lakers, the inertia created when you bring the superstar in. I do get it. And it's hard to overpay. It generally pays off. But you have to, at some point, not bid against yourself. You have to have pride. You can't give away 8 draft picks and 7 players. That's just idiotic. I got news for you. LeBron, Anthony Davis are not going to win a championship. I'm not even sure. It's like LeBron and D. Wade. They're great, but they need other parts to win.
Just because you get Anthony Davis, if you give all that up, you still need shooters around you. It's not over.
LeBron and D. Wade were never the perfect match. They were good buddies, but they were both, neither was a great perimeter shooter. They were both great athletes. They were both drivers. They needed Batty A.
There were a bunch of guys that contributed to those final
shooters,
runs of those championships.
Ray Allen, Mike Miller, Batty A. You needed shooters. This Laker team, Anthony Davis and LeBron, are not winning a championship. You got to get shooters.